Out here, we feel things. The sore calves that lead to epic views. The cool waterfall mist during a hot hike. And the breeze that hits just right at the summit. But hey, don't just listen to us. Experience it for yourself. All Trails makes it easy to discover the best of the outdoors. With more than 450,000 trails around the world, points of interest along the trail, and offline maps for always-on navigation. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
At California Psychics, we know that sometimes you can wake up thinking,
ugh, I don't know if I'm in the right career. Ew, or the right relationship.
But whatever your life dilemma, at California Psychics, we'll give you the guidance you need to feel certain about your life choices. And because we only connect you with the very best, we guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. California Psychics. Call 1-800-PREDICT today and get 20 minutes for just $20.
He's Brad Evans, and he's next.
And now, from the legendary Studio B, so you're in Seattle with Gregor.
I have this super fond memory, I don't remember who it was against or what was going on, but of Brad flying down the wing, and he did that little thing where you kick the ball kind of up and a rainbow over your head to get just burned by a defender, and it was one of the sweetest moves. He had, like, the greatest game, and, like, ever since then, I've been like, do that again. I wonder if he even remembers that. I should have asked him, damn it! It feels sort of weird that the first media encounter I've had with a player from the Seattle Sounders FC comes at a time when they're struggling to make the playoffs. And that's something that we've all, in those first seven seasons of fans, have sort of taken for granted, I think. Not everyone, probably, but it sucks that for Brad, we're going to bring that up, obviously, because he's the Sounders captain, and it would be nice just to hear his take on it. We see tons of names come and go, some even coming back, like Flacco or Freeburg, but Brad's one of those guys that's been here the entire time, and his love of Seattle, for you, it kind of took me by surprise. Who knew that a guy so focused on kickflips as a kid would turn that sweet footwork into some MLS soccer cash? He's a straight shooter and a lot of fun. Sounders FC player / Incubus superfan. It's Brad Evans.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm feeling good.
Good.
Yeah, I think that's worked out. I'm not supposed to have gum, I guess. After 20 years in the business, you'd think I'd have this figured out.
Is that like rule number one?
Sort of. It's just the smacking noise. It gets really gross if you do it. It is
my wife's like least favorite noise, too.
If it's like
smacking. Gum is okay, but food, dude.
God. I have a friend at 36 years old that's still.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude.
Yeah, figure it out.
Now, we do it to be annoying sometimes because it's like grosses people out and they get like nothing encourages rage out of somebody that is mad about that stuff than doing that. But for some reason, they keep coming back for more.
Pet peeves.
Yeah. Hi, Brad Evans. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, dude. This is exciting. We're going to broadcast Sounders matches on the end, which I think is a crazy fit.
I know, it's sick. I love it.
You music guy?
Big music guy, yeah.
You pointed to an Incubus record out in the hallway.
That was my jam. That's my era. First big concert I went to was Incubus, Sugar Ray.
Oh, my God.
Sugar Ray.
Where was it?
In Phoenix.
I lived in Arizona for a long time.
Grade for me. So we were, that was, I don't even remember what the venue was.
Oh,
outdoor.
God. Cricket Pavilion type thing or whatever.
Yeah, Cricket Pavilion. I think.
That's cool. Okay. I lived in Tucson for 10 years, and so we kind of looked up the road at Phoenix, like, get out of here, big city.
Yeah. I like Tucson, though. It's where we do our preseason.
Yeah, it's fun out there, and it's nice in February when you start.
It's perfect. Yeah. It's ridiculous now, but yeah, you're right. Winter months, perfect.
Yeah, I don't know how people do. I don't know how you grew up playing soccer in Phoenix, man. That's bananas.
Yeah, but you just don't know any better.
Yeah.
Like, that's just what, you know, you grow up there, and you have no idea what it's like to play on really like a nice grass field. So anytime we got to play a couple tournaments in California, we were so stoked, you know, drive out nice and cool, ride on the beach and just enjoy the real grass.
I don't think anyone knows like how bad there's just like those patches of grass that grow in like bulbs and like the ball takes wicked like bounces and stuff.
The absolute worst.
And slide tackling is a whole other thing. But you're young, so you just do it.
You don't care. You really just do not care. Just deal with it.
That's crazy, dude. When did you, I guess it's probably hard to tell, but when did you know that you were going to do soccer or sports or something?
That's a question I get often. Playing soccer when I was 5.
Yeah.
Didn't really enjoy it until a couple years later. Tried to play a couple other sports, but my mom said I cried the whole time. So soccer was the one that stuck. So she was like, all right, we'll continue that. 10, I started playing club soccer.
Yeah.
And then actually I got really into skateboarding in my teens.
What?
And that's what I did like all the time. I never had a soccer player on my wall. I never watched soccer videos when I was young. I had all skateboarders, all posters, subscribed to Thrasher magazine. Like, that was my thing. Built my own boxes, rails out front.
Oh, wow.
That's like, yeah, what I did. So,
patient parents.
Awesome parents. Yeah. Yeah, awesome parents. Let me do what I wanted to do, but also forced me to go to training twice a week. So they made me keep up with the sports side of it, but have fun outside of that and do what I want. So, but soccer was, didn't realize professionally I was going to play until, you know, halfway through college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, when you play at a collegiate level, I always thought that was like the pinnacle. Like, oh my God, they made it to college. But I know some college athletes and they still are just, you know, goofing off like they were in high school or whatever. I think maybe there's a little more focus to it. But
of course, yeah. I think the biggest thing for me was I played on the under 20 national team my sophomore year with Ziggy. And I saw the next year, I saw all the guys leave school early. And I was like, wait, I was just playing with those guys. Why can't I do what they're doing?
Cool.
So that kind of, you know, clicked and made me push myself to try and reach that level. So, obviously, a lot of those guys still playing in the league, so followed in their footsteps a bit.
That's nuts, because I don't think of Arizona as a big soccer place. There's tournaments that happen and stuff, I get it, but like it doesn't seem where you think of Seattle kind of as being one of those places, California maybe too. I don't even know about the East Coast really that much.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the biggest thing about Arizona and why it's not considered a big soccer state is up until 2 years ago, there was no Division I soccer.
Oh.
So all the youth players had to go out of state.
Yeah.
And, you know, nine out of ten aren't going to be able to afford an out of state scholarship.
Yeah,
you know, in schools like California, why would I recruit a guy from Arizona when I can get the same player for an in-state scholarship? So Grand Canyon University now has a Division I program, so it kind of starting to build that rapport. But until the, you know, the Title IX, until ASU, U of A, the big schools get a soccer team, it's difficult to get out of state and really get going. So a big soccer population, but, you know, you're still waiting for that professional team or high-end collegiate level to get a team.
There's one thing I've learned how to do. It's read Wikipedia. All right. And so I read about you a little bit. Not actually enough, probably. But I saw that we have something in common, social science in college.
Social science major. Man.
Tell me you were communications.
I was. So my emphasis was multicultural education. I had an education minor as well.
Wow. Dude.
Well, I never finished school, though. That's the thing. Yeah. So I'm still getting, because you have to leave early for the draft.
Oh.
So and we're on a quarter system. So I missed two quarters. I had to withdraw in my sophomore year to go to the U20 World Cup. So I'm a bit behind, but I'm
gonna
on my way. At some point, I think I will. Just circumstances early in my career, you know, getting picked up in Columbus, I would have had to pay out-of-state tuition and it was like, all right, I just couldn't afford it. So now it's getting easier.
That's crazy, though. Your profession is one that has like a kind of a shelf life. Like,
yeah.
You kind of, I imagine you'll play for another 35 years probably. But yeah, why not wait to finish your education if you can make a professional buck doing that?
Yeah, if you can, you know, you ride the wave as long as you can, and then you reevaluate and see what you need to do. But you know, I may not need my degree for what I do next. Who knows? And if I do, I'll do it.
Let me tell you,
it's one of those.
Somebody's studying social sciences who made it to radio. I can tell you that.
I'll follow in your footsteps.
For me, yeah, come on in. We'll give you a show. We'll let you play Incubus all day.
Incubus hour.
You seem like a smart guy, and I'm sorry to project that just from reading Twitter and whatnot, but like I saw Neil deGrasse Tyson last night.
I know, and I was watching. Why didn't I go to that?
Why didn't you?
I subscribed to the podcast and everything. Like, what am I doing?
Are you into that? Are you into science and stuff? I mean, other than the Incubus album?
Yeah, of course.
That's cool.
That's a great album, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's a awesome album. There's an era that goes with that. I'm surprised you didn't say that you were into punk rock too, being
skateboarder
of that time specifically. Phoenix, like,
yeah, Newfound Glory, those bands, they were pretty big as I was coming up, but no like real big punk, like I mean NoFX, yeah, a little bit.
Nice.
Bad Religion,
Pennywise, maybe.
Pennywise, yeah, mostly, you know, from video games too. You're playing Tony Hawk.
Yeah, man, absolutely.
Yeah, but I was stoked about your post about Neil deGrasse. And why I missed that, I have no idea. What an idiot.
Hey, he's playing tonight. You put in the right mention to somebody,
yeah, right?
I bet you can still get a ticket.
Maybe I'll throw him a tweet this afternoon.
You should.
See if he's listening.
I saw him last night. I won't spoil it and stuff. It's like, well, it's tough. When you're a guy that's in his position and you have that much voice,
uh-huh.
It's easy to be a celebrity that goes and like when you say something, everyone jumps on it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was him showing how he's in touch with who he is. He's science first and sort of this weird like misunderstood celebrity second, and he like makes fun of it the whole time.
Right, right.
That was kind of the theme I walked away with, was being like, that guy understands what he is.
Of course, and he's a smart guy.
Right, and I think that's what it comes down to, is he's not self-absorbed into it, because there's enough self-deprecation there. He dropped an F-bomb at some point. I was like, yes! Yeah,
he's real.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely.
Real. Yeah, but he also just wants to spread the word of science, and
he's also a science teacher, effectively. Yeah. He comes out and he's like, I don't know what you're expecting, but this is a two-hour lecture about science.
Love that.
We're like, cool, let's do it. Yeah, he's doing it again tonight. That's what it would be worth
I need to get over.
Sending a tweet.
I need to do it.
See if we can't connect those dots. You were out talking to the soccer kids, the Eastside FC?
Yeah, random. That was awesome.
Are you, do you have a future in coaching kids?
I don't know. When I'm out there, I absolutely love it. And it's tough to go to training. You know, you're there for it doesn't seem like a long day, but, you know, we're done at 2:00.
Yeah.
And it's tough while we're out there. You know, we're training and it's hot, whatever, we're working for 2 hours. And then, you know, you kind of have the rest of the day to yourself and you kind of get used to that.
Yeah, sure.
And then, you know, guys ask, you know, do you want to coach local club teams? You want to come out and coach? And it's like, you know, the last thing I want to do is go coach, be on my feet. The next day I pull a muscle and the trainer's ass, well, what'd you do yesterday? And I got to be like, all right, well, you know, I was coaching for 2 hours and maybe that led to this injury injury. And it's like, I'm in my own head in some ways, but when I'm out there, like the other day, it was so fun. It was an absolute blast. I mean, we brought everything out. We brought Soundwave, we brought fans, Star Spangled Banner. It was awesome, man. And the girls were so appreciative.
Well, so how does that compare to when you were a kid coming up? Were there in Arizona, there weren't any soccer stars coming in?
No, nothing.
Encourage you?
I didn't see my first professional soccer match live until I was in college at Irvine, and I went to go watch the Galaxy play.
Oh, wow.
So I'm in my 20s, and now you get, you know, 8-year-old girls who knew who we were before we even walked out there. And that's what a jump start. You know, it's cultural. It's, you know, being a massive club now in Seattle, and it's a jump start. And, you know, it all ties into where we want to be as a league and do we want to be the best in the world, but it has to start at some point. And these little things, like, you know, going out to a U8 girls team, they get it, you know, and at a young age, now you start to build that awareness and that, you know, it's deep rooted in our culture. So we're well on our way. It's still a slow process, but it was a great day for Chad and I.
Did you play AYSO at any point? Were you flipping the jersey?
YMCA.
Okay.
Yeah, YMCA.
Did they have reversible jerseys and
reversible
stuff?
Reversible jerseys, yeah. But, you know, I was scoring like 10 goals a game.
Yeah.
And I finally had a coach who said, all right.
Bragger.
You can, yeah, well, that was, you know, it was the next step was club soccer. So I had a coach who said, all right, to my mom, he can stay here and, you know, score 10 goals a game
dominate,
and have fun.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you can test him in club soccer and where he won't be the best player, but he could, you know, potentially develop and it's more of a challenge.
That's crazy. I mean, are you hopeful based on what you're seeing now that you and your colleagues are able to get out there and inspire and stuff?
Yeah, you know, at some point we all will. I think none of us want anything more than to watch the game grow. And the only way to do that is to have young soccer minds out there who have played the game, who have seen MLS evolve into what it is now. You know, it's 10 years in the league now, so I've been on the bottom end of it. And now, you know, towards the end of my career, I'm, you know, where I want to be. So it's you want to spread that message and spread your ideas of soccer instead of just having a 30-year-old dad who has never played the game before coaching a team. To get to the next level, we got to have guys who are aware of the sport.
You a Men in Blazers guy at all?
Yeah, a little bit.
They talk about did a special on that on Iceland and how they have all these top level coaches because they trained everyone so that way there was real enthusiasm about it rather than just dad who doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, and I mean, population wise, you can do that for a country. I guess technically, if the Sounders really wanted to get into it, we could do it in Seattle. But it's a deep rooted issue, and it could be the problem is when you look at a country like Iceland. Every coach is Icelandic, and everyone has the same vision of how the game should be played. You look at Germany, every coach is German. They have a specific view of how the game's played. Every coach in Spain, pretty much, is Spanish. So they have Brazil, they have a very specific style of play. You come to America, my club in Arizona, I've had a coach from Trinidad, a coach from Brazil, a coach from England, a coach from this, that, and the other. So all these different ideas, until there's a central idea, then maybe we make it to the next level. Who knows? Or is it that we're such a melting pot that we get flavors of each that take us to the next level, and we're just waiting for that next Pulisic, the next star to lift us to the next level. Who knows?
I mean, it's America, so we're going to do things our way. That's for sure. That seems like how it's going to go. That's crazy. Now, I imagine MLS, it's got to be tough. You're a young guy. It's great to get picked up by a team, but when that team is Columbus, Ohio, come on, man. You can't be that stoked to be a big name in Columbus. I just equated you as a big name there. I'm sorry, when you got drafted, you probably weren't, but like, to get a guy that's a big name to come to Columbus, were you like...
Yeah,
were you excited to get there because it was professional or
serious culture shock? I was one day in Newport Beach and then straight out to Columbus, and that was the first time I ever saw it snow in real life. Was when I got drafted to Columbus. So I opened up the window. We were there in late January, and I was like, "What am I doing? What am I doing?" And I was injured pretty much the whole year, and I wasn't in a good place that year.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did live with Chad Marshall. we were lucky enough to live together my first year, so we had a pretty good time. But yeah, I think, like you're saying, Columbus, not the destination, especially at the time, but the next year I ended up playing almost every game. We won an MLS Cup. Winning cures everything, dude. You could play in Antarctica, and if you're winning an MLS Cup, you're stoked.
Well, it's like last season they went to the final at least, and now not so great this year. That's gotta hurt as well to be in Columbus and go from being great to being like, what happened?
MLS is crazy, man. It's every game is feels like a 50-50. There's so much parity. Any team wins on any day. I mean, Colorado was, you know, not in it last year, and now they're, you know, close to top of the table. Columbus was top, and now they're bottom. Portland, you know, on that red line, who were in the MLS Cup last year. So
Seattle,
you just never know. Yeah, Seattle was, you know, we were buzzing last year. Got into the playoffs, literally one penalty kick away from potentially advancing, and now we find ourselves fighting for our lives. So it's sports, and we can't have it all roses all the time, but we try our best.
That's nuts, man. Is it annoying that it's so up for grabs like that? Every season when you start, you don't know what you're getting into?
It's not annoying. It brings interesting challenges. And now with our implementation of a new like system of free agency, at the end of the year, we got guys, you know, who have played a long time at certain clubs that are picking and choosing where they want to go. So it's making an interesting dynamic, and you just never know who's going to be on top. So you deal with injuries and all that stuff too. So it's definitely difficult, but history kind of shows itself that we've been a very good team historically. Yeah. So we kind of have to ride that coattail right now and show that we're willing to make a good run at this at the end.
Now, a guy like Steven Gerrard comes over to L.A., and he can pretty much get around without being recognized.
Yeah.
Brad Evans has been in Seattle for 7 or 8 years now. Are you able to go and get things done, QFC, haircut, that type of stuff?
Of
without
course, yeah.
Can you still have some anonymity?
Everybody is so awesome here. I'll tell you a story. In Columbus, the difference in fans. In Columbus, well, not to single out any fan is better than the other, but had an experience in Columbus. We had just won the Eastern Conference Championship. My roommate the second year was Robbie Rogers.
Yeah.
Went over to the fans, threw his jersey into the crowd. So stoked. Fans, connection. Get home that night. That jersey's already on Craigslist for sale. Like, I'm convinced that would never, ever happen in Seattle. Like, it's just different. The fans respect us so much, and it's mutual. And we understand that this here doesn't happen anywhere else in the league. You know, we guys can say it does, but not on this level, not the same amount of fans. And you go everywhere in the city and everyone's so appreciative, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's everybody's so cool, no matter where you go.
That's a great take, man, because it's like you say, I'm sure there are other cities nearby that are even like, we're the best fans in the universe. But since day one, since the lights switched on here, the stands have been packed.
Yeah, different level. Really a different level. And you know, if you know you end up leaving the team, everybody ends up wanting to come back, just because you know what you get here. It's phenomenal.
Now, okay, we talked about your work schedule a little bit, and it's got to be pretty easy for people to be like, you're on the field a few days a week from 9 to noon or whatever, get some training done or whatever. How do you stay out of trouble, though, with your free time? How do you avoid being out and getting injured and stupid stuff like that? I imagine you could get to the bar with your buddies every night if you wanted.
Yeah, I mean, so when I look at a normal week, if it's a Saturday game, you know, this past Saturday we had some fun after the game, had some friends in town, so we went out to Edgewater. One of our friends' brothers was playing a live band there, so he's playing like Sublime covers, and it was awesome. A four-man band. It was really cool. And then you recover on football Sunday. And you watch football. We don't have training. Monday, Tuesday of this week were tough trainings. And it, like you said, okay, it's we're really training about 10 to 12, but it's, you know, 2 hours of busting your ass.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're not, you're probably not playing on the weekend.
Oh, wow.
And that's the way that, you know, you have to view it. And especially, you know, you got a new coach in Schmetz, and you've also were skirting that red line there. There's no rest. There's no time to, you know, sit back and say, okay, today I need to take it easy because I got a big game this weekend. There's no time for that right now.
Well, the fitness on the team looks like it's incredible.
Yeah, towards the end of the season, everything, the baseline is there. There's nobody's going to get any fitter right now. Nobody's going to really lose fitness right now because you've been through just about a whole season. So you're really gaining sharpness and more technical and tactical aspects of the game right now. So you're playing games, having fun, but within that is a lot of thinking of the game and basically how you're going to break down your opponent in LA this week. Yesterday, the team had off and a day off. If you got kids, you're pretty much babysitting the whole day, right? Yeah. Wife is gone doing her own thing.
Yeah.
For me, yesterday, my wife works kind of opposite schedule of me. So she's home in the mornings. I'm home in the evenings. And so it's just me and the dog. And we just, you know, hit up the park, go to the grocery store and really just put the legs up and chill out, make sure that the body's recovered for today was another hard day. So yeah, I mean, it's tough, but it's good. Like I wouldn't rather be doing anything else, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
So
what's the exercise when you say it's a tough day? What's the one where they really bust your ass on, where you're like, God, not this again?
I mean, anytime you play, so yesterday the guys played, I was still, this little calf was bugging me a little bit. So today was my first full day in training. So Tuesday was a tough day for the guys. The starters that played on the weekend played against the reserve 2 times 8 minutes, and it's full out 11v11, and then break, and then the starters will step off, do a little regen on the side, and the reserves will then play a 30-minute game against S2, full bore, 11v11, you know, game-like to get that fitness.
Wow.
And then, yeah, so, I mean, it's intense. I mean, guys are playing games, little short games midweek, you know, and you got the regular fouls, you got guys shouting for penalty kicks, and you got guys who want to play, and then those guys who are playing want to keep playing. So that's how you keep each other pushing and trying to get to the next level.
But how do you temper that so a guy doesn't get studs to the back of his calf like
that? You're smart. You've done it for long enough that, you know, if in practice, if there's a 50-50, the last thing I want to do is try and smash Aussie or something like that, you know, because both of us generally are probably not going to get out of a tackle with each other. But during practice, you know, either I'll let him have the ball or he'll, you know, kind of step away and I'll take off, because it's not worth one tackle in practice to miss the rest of the season because of that tackle.
Especially at this point, man.
Exactly. Especially at this point. We can't lose any bodies.
That's crazy, man. How's Schmetz been? Has that been cool?
Yeah, it's been really cool. Different, but also trainings are a little bit similar, but a little bit more modified, maybe a little bit more intense. You know, he was an assistant coach with Zig for so long that the differences aren't going to be as if somebody else stepped in and changed the script completely, right? And then they want to play a certain way, a 3-5-2, or we've kept the same model, the 4-2-3-1 with Schmetz. And, you know, so far I think he's 4-1-1 since he's been at the helm. If we can continue that through the last 6 games, you know, we're sitting pretty. We still got a lot of work to do. But, yeah, it's been good. The temperament's been good. He demands a lot of the guys, a bit more vocal, a bit more in your face.
It doesn't seem that way at all from the sidelines. He's so nice when he's like, you know, Casey will ask him a question or whatever, and he'll just give a very straight, simple answer, and he's very calm.
He saves that for the locker room, then, I guess. when we need to be ripped into, we do, and when we need to be praised, we're praised. The biggest thing is making sure that everybody's held accountable, and when you do that, you have a finely oiled machine. So nobody's cheating, nobody's getting off the hook.
It seems like you were made famous earlier in the season for being like, if you're not here to play, like, then get the hell out of here.
I mean, yeah, we were going through a difficult time.
Yeah.
And whatever you can do to jumpstart and kickstart, you kind of have to do. If it makes you the bad guy, if it makes you the villain or the you know, whatever you want to call it. I'll take it on my shoulders, but, you know, it is what it is. And
there's too many PR people that get in the middle of these things, and maybe sometimes words need to be had, I think. Maybe sometimes someone needs to step up and, like, kick and a little ass.
You know, with our sport, everybody leads differently. You know, I've had some captains that, you know, call a team meeting and we try to get everybody on board and say, you know, we're going to have a great practice today and then we're going to win this weekend. That's not how I view it. I view it as everybody should individually be held accountable. And when you do that, then the team runs well. And if you can't do that, then either somebody else should or, you know, the coach should get rid of you.
You still in touch with Ziggy at all? You know, if he's doing all right and everything?
Yeah, a couple texts here and there.
Imagine after all that time together.
Yeah, I think he obviously misses coaching, number one. So I think he's looking to jump back in as quick as possible. I don't really have too many conversations in depth, but he was more curious as to why I wasn't playing. So just asked him how he's doing. And he said, you know, miss coaching. So just gave him a quick, you'll be back on your feet soon. Like, what do I say? It's tough to answer question.
That's a tough one to even. It sucks. The situation sucks for everybody when that change has to be made and it just happens. But like, we're all humans when we walk away from work or whatever.
Of course, yeah. You want to go out on your own terms. And when that doesn't happen, it's a little blemish.
When you came to Seattle, you must have been pumped, even not knowing what you were walking into, just to come to a city like Seattle. That first time you figure out that you're going to be playing full-time, at least at home, on artificial turf. What goes through the old brain there?
Yeah, not my favorite, but it's weird now. Like, I don't get any more sore, really, playing on turf than I do on grass. It just doesn't affect me as much anymore. Cool. So you get used to it. Your body gets used to it. It adjusts. But, I mean, we'd like to say 10 out of 10 times you like to play on grass over turf, but I know that the boys in San Jose said they'd rather play on turf than play on their grass down there. Looks nice on TV, but I guess they laid that field down on a marsh and it's too wet underneath and everybody's slipping and sliding, even if you're wearing studs. So they wish that they played on turf. For the most part, you want to play on grass, but it is what it is now. Like, it's just another day at the office when we're out there.
That's crazy, man. I know it deters a lot of big stars from wanting to come and play because they don't want to end up hurt and stuff. And that, I don't know if that's an excuse, if it's a reason to rest a guy, or if they're just being kind of wimpy.
Yeah, I mean, you never saw Henri at our stadium because he wouldn't play on turf. It becomes a mental block for some guys, I think.
It's kind of funny. You can kind of talk crap then a little bit.
Yeah, of course.
When you're yelling at a guy, it's your job when you put that armband on and you're out there yelling at your guys or the ref specifically. How heated does that get? Because you guys look mad, but I don't know how many F-bombs you're dropping before that ref turns on you.
Well, he turned on me in Colorado this year when I said too much.
Yeah.
Said a little bit too much to his face, got a yellow card, turned around, said a little bit more, and then he gave me a red card. But then I also talked to another referee a couple weeks later in New England, and he was like, he was a younger ref. The other ref was a little bit older, a little bit more established. And the younger ref, a couple of weeks later, said, yeah, I don't see a problem with what he said. It wasn't even, I mean, I wasn't like degrading or anything, but I said what I thought should have happened on that play. A couple of F-bombs, of course.
Yeah.
Some refs are a little bit softer than others. The younger guys seem to get it a little bit more. They have a little bit thicker skin, I think. And the old guys think that, you know, they're a little bit more established, so there should be that respect. But at the end of the day, my opinion of a ref is that he's there for us and not the other way around. I'm not there for him. The fans aren't there for him. He's there to referee the game, and that's it. So whatever's said on the field, I don't really think that. If he was in here right now, I'd have a great conversation with him, you know, and I think they take it a little bit too personal.
In the heat of the moment, perhaps, the
of
same
course,
way
yeah.
that you're blowing up there, taking it personally.
Yeah, and some players too.
How much can you actually hear out on the field when you're yelling at guys? Can you hear anything?
No, nothing. Here in Seattle, nothing.
Yeah, because
nothing.
ECS is blowing up behind
you
or something.
Yeah, I'll lose my voice after some games, and then you get to a point where you're like, what's the point?
So will I, but usually that's the fault of beer and then passion. So that's crazy, because I can only imagine maybe at other stadiums where there's less turnout that you'll be able to actually communicate and stuff. So you have to be able to non-verbally cue each other and be able to play off one another just by looks and stuff.
Well, that's what we work on practice on a daily basis. You try to work on routines as much as possible, so that patterns, things like that, so that things become innate and they become just an afterthought, a subconscious thing. And there's a lot of soccer 101 that's give and goes, obvious. You know, when you play the game long enough, you know when that should happen, and the person I'm playing the ball should know that I'm going to be sprinting at this point without looking at his eyes, without sticking out my hand, without telling him that I'm going there. He knows automatically because we've done it so many times in practice. Mm. And it just becomes a thing that's routine. And you don't have to talk on the field, although it does help. So it's you really don't need to really say anything on the field. There's very few times that you should have to talk, although it does help. But there's moments where the game kind of just flows where nothing's ever said and you score a beautiful goal.
That's why you guys can all speak different languages if you need to.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. That's why soccer ball speaks every language, right?
That's awesome. Now I'm going to try and pick out more cuss words that you use when you're talking to the refs. That's rad.
Slow it down, Tebow.
Ideally, when you wanted to... Yeah, exactly. Ideally, when you think of yourself as a soccer player, where are you on the pitch? Like from a kid, from being a kid to being an adult, now you're playing center back as we speak. Where do you see? Like you're a goal scoring forward as a kid, and now you've transitioned. Like what's your mental image of Brad Evans on the pitch as a soccer player?
I think scoring goals. That's always been there's nothing like it.
But you've never really been that guy here in Seattle. You've scored some goals, but
I mean, I used to be a box to box midfielder here. Yeah. You know, 5-6 goals a season. And then kind of had to then became the utility guy that plugged in everywhere. Tough to find a rhythm when you're in that mode and you're in that position. But you go out to training today and I've got some time to myself off to the side and nobody's even in the goal. And it's just, you know, bending the ball into the corner and striking a good ball into the back of the net. When you've played forward for a long time, like I did growing up in college is where I played forward at number 9. Under 20s is where I played forward a little bit, that coupled with right back. There's really nothing like it. And then you score a couple goals in front of these fans, and it's an addicting feeling. Like you want it over and over and over again because it's so freaking awesome. But right now, obviously, with Torres back, I'll find a new position. 6 games left. I mean, it's tough. I don't potentially playing out wide, maybe. Maybe stepping back into the midfield next to Ozzie. Who knows? Somebody could get injured, you know, right now as we speak, so you kind of have to be ready for anything at this point. But I always like scoring goals, so if I can get in front of the goal
that's gotta be
a couple more times, it'd be awesome.
That's gotta be a downside of playing center back, is you really only get the chances when it's on a set piece or something like that.
Set
to run
piece
up there.
Or maybe like Clint is out injured and I get to take a PK, but that really didn't happen this year, so we didn't get many PKs for us while he was off the field.
That's tough, man. Is knowing Chad been a advantage to trying to make that center back pairing then? Like the fact that you guys go so far back, was that helpful?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think the biggest thing with Chad was that he, 3-time defender of the year, the most to ever do that in MLS is phenomenal. So I realized that he doesn't make mistakes. Just because he's played that position. That's the only position he's ever played in soccer, right? So everything becomes very it's very easy for him. Obviously, coupled with his size, he's absolutely massive.
Yeah.
He doesn't make mistakes 99 out of 100 times. When he does, he'll be the first one to raise his hand. But my job then next to him is to, if he does make that mistake, cover for him. And also, his job then becomes when I would make mistakes to cover for me, and that is that role. Communication-wise, not too much. It's a lot of left, right, guy in front of you, but there isn't too much yelling and screaming at each other. We've known each other for so long that it was it was cool. I mean, last year we tied for the league's least amount of goals against, and that was my first time playing center back. This year we were still middle of the pack in terms of goals against, even though our record wasn't great. So in saying that, I mean, a converted center back, I feel like we did pretty good. And now it's off to try and score some goals, I guess, on the other side, become a midfielder again.
That's awesome. Man. Huh. So all right, well, goal scoring Landon Donovan. He's back after 2 years of commercial acting, his career. Soccer commentary also did a great job on, actually. But he retired at your age.
That's weird.
It doesn't seem like you're anywhere near that.
No,
talking
I'm not.
To you specifically.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so what's your future look like? I mean, you've got surely a decade left. Then what, though?
Some days I plan on playing until, you know, I can't anymore. So you physically have to, you know, the coach has to say, we don't want you anymore. But then some days, you know, you play 3 games in a week and you come in the next day and your back is on fire and then your hamstring hurts and this, that, and the other. And you're just like, dude, how much longer can I do this for? And then you get healthy, you recover 3 days later, and you're buzzing. You don't even think about it. So until it becomes a point where I can't do it anymore. I can't perform. Managers don't want me. No team in the league wants me. Then I'll step away. I'm smart enough to know that when the time has come, the time has come. But until then, I'm just keep grinding and keep trying to perform. That's number one.
It's got to be nice to see a guy like Donovan pick it back up, though, and still be able to run. He scored a goal. He's still playing. Like,
yeah, well,
at a good level.
Donovan's a freak. I mean, seriously, he's a freak athlete. I mean, him and I remember you would always hear, you know, the beep test, I'm sure you've heard of, is the fitness test. The cones are 20 yards apart, and you've got to run and hit the beep at every moment. Every beep, every up and down, the beep gets faster and faster and faster. And so that's supposed to your aerobic fitness, right?
Yeah.
Try to catch the beeps. And he and Beasley, like from 17 years old, would just absolutely destroy this test. And that would be coupled with not really doing much in the off season. So they're just like these freak athletes who can perform on a daily basis without really doing too much. It just is easy for Landon, and it's not fair. But that's why you get these special athletes, is you have to have those, you know, and you look, how can I get to that level? Nobody really will. I mean, it'll be a long, long time before somebody gets remotely close to his goals and assists. So it's, yeah, it is what it is. And I think he's happy to be back. You know, he sent me a text the other day, like, what's wrong with you? I wanted to play against you one last time this weekend. So I'm trying to work my way back as fast as I can. And my response, I wanted it to be a practice. I was thinking about this today. I responded like, oh, yeah, I'm getting healthy. I want to be ready to go for this weekend, play against you. And I wanted to respond with, yeah, I really wanted to play against Gerard one last time, too. And, just absolutely kill him. It'd be so funny.
That's incredible. So, I mean, do we got a baby Brad in the future? You in dad shorts and clipboard and mesh hat blowing a whistle at kids running around?
My wife and I are anti-kid.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you going to be pro-travel then?
Pro-travel, pro-dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have no plans.
I didn't really talk to you about that. Actually, the Seattle Humane, that's a big thing you do. That's how'd you get involved with them, helping out with that?
Like I said, no kids.
Yeah.
Go dogs. I've always had a thing for animals, so you know, just kind of reached out and a couple tweets, started following them on Twitter. My wife said she wanted to get more involved in the community, so we kind of found that as a common ground. So she goes and does the Run Dog Run program, so shows up on Saturday mornings, Friday mornings, and you get a hyper dog, and she'll take it for a 4-mile run, bring it in, get some energy out. So I put on that Putts for Pets every February, raise some money, and a really cool night. Obviously, you were there.
The flat stick is something else,
yeah,
man.
It's cool, isn't it? Yeah, those guys are season ticket holders, and they're just the coolest dudes. Yeah. Really good night, and obviously they've already broken ground on their new facility. You know, just appreciate their support, obviously, and a great place.
Finally, how do you manage your social media? You're really good about it. You're really good at responding and engaging the local community, but man, some of these soccer fans are impossible to please, and they're willing to let you know that on the internet.
Yeah. Mild temperament.
Okay.
Yeah. I think, you know, like we said, I got afternoon to, you know, sit there and mull around. So I enjoy it. I don't take it seriously. But the more, I think now the coolest part is the more followers that you have, the easier it is to reach out about fundraising and, you know, fighting the cause for whatever that may be. And that actually has been the coolest part by far is, you know, Zach Scott needs help reaching a goal within, you know, 10 minutes. He's already reached that goal just from a couple retweets. And that has really been the coolest part. Couple that with fan interaction is fun. I'll take it all day long. I'll be the scapegoat. I'll, you know, you can give it to me as much as you want. You're never going to rattle me, really.
Oh, that's cool.
Unless you like attack my family or something like that, then that's or my dog. That's a different story. But yeah, just coupling it with a mild temperament and knowing that at the end of the day, it's a sport and we don't go out there trying to lose the game. You know, we try to win every single game.
Oh my God, that's perspective, man. That's
reality is that, you know, right now, I just want to have fun. And I have to take the losses with the wins all the time.
But they'll beat you up if you're in first place. I mean, like...
Yeah, of course. No, there's a million fans who think I'm shit. That's fine. I don't really care. As long as I'm grinding and I'm, you know, doing my thing, I'm cool. I'm good.
Brad Evans, thanks for coming in, dude.
No worries. Thanks for having me, man.
You've been listening to So You're in Seattle with Gregor. Follow him on Twitter at HeyGregor. Find more episodes online at SoYou'reInSeattle.com. So You're in Seattle is a Burrito Butt production.
Yeah, you're a good dog, Chowder.